the body of Christ. We get that. But we're this morning speaking of the local church. What are our objectives? So just the big bullet points. The gathered church is ministering to the body. So please look at me. When you show up at church on Sunday morning or Sunday night or Wednesday night, I'm glad you're here. But remember, showing up, having a seat, really is not Christian. Because in the first century, they didn't even have a building. They didn't have places to sit down. Probably sit down on the floor or on the ground. It's what we do when we come together are our objectives, which means not just my objective, but your objective. We're to do things for one another. Now, we could use the one another passages, of which there are many, but we won't. Last week, we talked about what those purposes are, our objectives are. We talked about edification or education, building one another up in the faith. We also talked about encouragement. It's amazing. I talked about encouragement in here, and I talked about encouragement in Sunday morning. At least one person heard the Sunday morning message about learning to encourage yourself. David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. So when you're discouraged, the problem is really yours, not someone else's, because you can encourage yourself in the Lord. But at the same time, we come together to encourage one another. When I come together with certain people, they encourage me immediately. I walk in a room, I like to see Dada over here. He encourages me. There are certain people I don't want to see because they discourage me. You say, can you name some of those? No, I won't name those. I like, by the way, certain people encourage you. They're upbeat, they're moving, they're alive, they're thinking, they're interacting. They want to know, they want to grow. Then there's people that are just pretty much, God gave me the gift of showing up and sleeping during church. Number two, or three, obviously the ordinances are a part of what we do, and number four was worship. I won't spend any time with that. Next page. The scattered church is ministering to the world, which is basically being an example and the concept of evangelism. Now, where we want to go today is I want to tie some things together. Many Christians will never really witness to people. Let's see if I can get your attention. The moment I tell you you need to talk to people about Christ, maybe you don't recognize this, but all of your angst and your emotions and your insecurities from junior high school immediately come to the front. Because here's the thing. Once you get married, you can hide in a marriage. You know, it's kind of like, well, the wife has to put up with me. We're married. Hello? But the moment you start talking to people, then all of our insecurities, and by the way, do you know your insecurities? Can you remember yourself in high school and junior high school? There are people that, this is how, I watch kids in the hallway. Some kids walk like this. Is that an extrovert? And there's people in our church like that. And it's very difficult for them to even think of witnessing to somebody. Now, what I want to do is do a couple of things with the notes and with this chart. If you start thinking of people not as weird, but in general, you listen, may I say this? If you're a person, now some of you were the star people in high school, and some of you weren't. But if you're one of those people that was quiet, hidden in a corner, you should be the best person at finding someone like that. And you never want someone to experience what you experienced. So once you understand the other, it's the person that doesn't fit in, then you become a person that thinks of ways, how can I make people comfortable? How can I make people fit in? Folks, evangelism is not all just preaching the gospel. It's a whole lot of things. Now, I don't have this in your notes. This is not new with me. This is profound. But it's not new with me. Start looking at people in a big picture. Not just, I'm going to tell somebody about the Lord, because frankly, That's not going to happen in America every day. Most people are going to keep you as far as away as they can from you. So you start seeing people in this position. Pre-conversion. And if somebody is not saved, what do you do with that person? That's where hospitality shows up. Hospitality starts looking for the other. Hospitality starts looking for the outsider. And they start saying, how can I make that person comfortable with me, comfortable with Christianity, at least open, make them feel welcome? We start doing things because the goal is this, is to move people this direction. Oh, by the way, I didn't say the goal of Pastor Warren. I said your goal. We're talking about the church. We're not talking about the pastor. The pastor does it because I'm a church member too. But our goal always is to try to bring people that direction and start looking for the... I'm not talking about the weirdo. Are most people comfortable? Tim Durham, you've been saved now forever, so you're a mature Christian. You know more Bible verses than some people who've been saved 40 years here. Let me ask you a question. Were you comfortable coming to this Baptist church before you were saved? What did you think was going to happen to you? You didn't know. But you didn't know what that was either. You just didn't know. By the way, I understand that. Now, do you understand that every person that comes here to some degree feels the same? Unless they're a saved person from a background like ours, they walk in the room and it feels comfortable. But most people, it's like, you expect me to do what? Now, here's the funny thing. Some of the people in this room, you remember your eighth grade class. You remember how you were the oddball. But yet you don't take the step to help other people not feel that way. Hospitality is looking for, because everybody, with a few exceptions. Cliffy over here is not one of the guys that feels, he's not a, what do they call it, a wallflower. You think, Cliff? You don't have a problem pretty much any place, correct? I'm sure you feel uncomfortable in some settings. Now, do you think about one of our pastors and one of our deacons? Dada is every bit as nice as Cliff, but he's more reserved. Is that right? Everybody's more reserved than Louie. He's working today, so I can pick on him. By the way, what's our goal? Our goal is to start looking for people. It's not a mercenary thing, and it doesn't just happen on Sunday morning. See, our problem is we think so can only happen here. No, the church is scattered. Where you work, people can look at you. They don't know what you believe. Tim, most people think you're a Baptist. What is that? That must be a cancer or something. You must be weird. You start looking at people as the other. How can I make that person comfortable? How can I make that person feel relaxed? How can I start talking to that person? Because my goal is to start bringing that person further along. Now, if I ask you in this church, who's good at this and who's not? I pastored for 8 years in the St. Louis area. I had one woman good at this. One. They left after my second year, and we never recouped because she was the kind of woman that she was like this, arms wide open. Now, we now have 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 women in this room like this. That in one level or another, they're able to encompass people. Who would they be if I asked you? Pachungai is one of them. Linda, though I never like to say anything positive about Linda, and Nancy are two of them to some degree. They are. They're just warm people. They're people that can embrace people. Folks, I'm not asking this to build a church. This is not mercenary. We're trying to reach people to get into our church. We're just trying to bring the gospel to people. And the way you do it is you become one of those people that's pretty in companies. Judah's obviously one of them too. I think there's several others. And then there's some of us that We're still back there in 7th and 8th grade. What you ought to do is look at pictures of you in your yearbook and see what you look like. I saw a picture of somebody in this room in a yearbook. Same problem today. Exact same problems. Because we never really grow up from that. Marriage simply protects us from having to deal with our insecurities. Now, I think with Pachungay, she's not the most secure person in this room. Go ahead and say, I'm sorry, or something. But with her and Dada together, do you understand? By the way, this is just simply growing up. To me, this is the piece missing in the modern church, because we don't live in a culture. My friend from Whitehall, when you grew up as a kid, you're 80 years old, in Whitehall, everybody went to church, one kind or another. I mean, it would have been 10%, 15% of people wouldn't go to church, probably no more than that. How about today? And not only they don't go to church, they're scared of this kind of, they don't know what's going to happen. Well, folks, part of our job is being one of those kind of people. And I think most of us have the ability to do that to some degree. So I look at this ministry of hospitality as pre-conversion ministry. Does that make sense? And that's what you're doing all the time. Folks, I don't know why it is. Maybe it's my ugly face, my big head, my big stomach. I don't know. I get recognized as being a pastor. I don't have a sign. I don't wear a tie most of the time. Maybe it's the voice. It's my big voice, I think, except today. But you know what? Every place I go, I want people, I don't want anybody to say, you're a Christian? You're a what? Aren't you that person that talks about yourself every time I see you? No, you want to be the person that bringing people this direction. As we look further, I'm going to ask you a question. By the way, what else can you do with this right here? Do you understand what this is? This is where a person's example, this is where hospitality of a biblical variety, that's where that comes in. You work a secular job, Army, you came to this church not on your own, is that correct? Because there was a nice lady named Hermie. And Hermie works, not where you work, does she? So you knew some people that knew her. And she says, you ought to go to my church. Yes. And you come here, you've gotten saved here, you've gotten baptized here, and even Matigasangulo here, or Cabeza Dura in Spanish, Hardhead got saved here, unbelievable. And your daughters have been saved and baptized here, and it all comes from a Hermie. And you think Hermie's a nice person? Now, she works weird hours, weird shifts. But I say something, folks. I don't think it takes what some of you are thinking. I think it takes, look at me, it takes shutting up talking about yourself. I have yet to see a person that talks about themselves that anybody listens to about the gospel. People are interested when you're interested in them. When I was down home, I took my mom and all the five living brothers and my mom's sister and one of the sister-in-laws that the husband's already gone. There was 15 or 20 of us. I took them all out for a pizza party for my mom's birthday and my aunt's birthday. And I talked almost none the entire night. I kept asking my uncles questions. I wanted to know what they did growing up. When do we learn that? People like it when you like to hear them. They don't like to hear you. Especially if you're a non... You know, you're like a push button. You push it and just... No one wants to hear that. Now, we'll look at it in a minute. Conversion, of course, is when you start presenting the gospel to them, and we'll talk about that. I'm using this as a line. In between here and here, you present the gospel. You probably present your testimony. And your testimony can be also back here. I'm not trying to say it's exactly cut off, but somewhere in there you talk about how you became a Christian, how you became a believer. You talk about your own personal testimony. You share the gospel with someone. And then, of course, somewhere in there, you're also going to, if the person comes to faith, you're going to talk about assurance. You're going to talk about fellowship in a local church. To me, these are pretty simple things. And then past that, it takes everything you know. Problem is, listen, you sit in a class and you learn how to rear children. And we talk about it for 3 months and you sit there and yawn because you're not planning on ever talking to anybody about it. Why do I know it? My children are grown. Answer the question. Because I'm planning on talking to people about their children. Because I'm not just interested in Army and, I was going to say something mean, but I'll be nice, Rolando. I'm not just interested in Army and Rolando. They have four precious children I'm interested in too. Aren't you? And I'm not only interested in them getting saved and then their life self-destructing, I'm interested in them growing and maturing, going off to college, becoming productive citizens, upstanding Christians. Is that not what you're interested in? Hey, you learn. What you learn, you share. To me, this is the 2 Timothy 2:2. All of it could be, but the things that you have learned, the presence of many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach you. By the way, we're always sharing ideas. Now, I'm going to throw one thing at you, and then I'm going to open this up for your thoughts or questions, and we'll go to notes. I don't think this has to be in order. The area that I witness the most, all right, guys, you're at work. What do most males complain about? Or their children. Well, you can't help them with a boss. You don't think that's true, Nicole? And what do women talk about? And their husbands and their kids. Most people are stressed out. Now, I put talking about these things over here, but actually, sometimes just giving people some simple answers to things that will help them are pre-evangelism. I remember talking to a couple one time, and they said, what is the one thing you can tell me about child rearing? And it was like, I said, I would start with this one. Are you ready? A happy, consistent bedtime for the children and the parents, which my friends from Whitehall, that would have been unthinkable for anybody to go to bed at 3 in the morning. Today, that's when kids go to bed. The biggest problem we have in this Christian school, on some days, you'll go into class, and you'll look at a kid, and you realize that kid went to bed about 3 in the morning. It's like, where was mom and dad? I don't know. Unplug devices, put them in a bag. But see, we won't do that because the baby child will cry. And then mom's crying, and then dad's crying. By the way, the second thing I would tell most people is you need to grow up and be a man or a woman and actually be in charge of your family, which means you have to be in charge of your emotions. You know, it's everything, isn't it, Cliff? It becomes everything. All right, any questions or comments on this? Does this make sense to you? By the way, it's the way you look at people. You're not looking at people like, oh, my goodness, there's a target. I'm going to go get that person. You are the kind of person who goes out into the world like Jesus did, seeking to do good. And what is that good? You're either going to be bringing the person towards Christ, sharing the gospel or your testimony, or encouraging them, grounding them in the faith, or bringing them forward, answering questions about the Christian life, and sometimes those can come back and help here. That's the way you look at people. You say, I'm not that kind of a person. I recognize that. And some of it goes right back to you're still lost in 7th and 8th grade. You were the girl that didn't know how to fix your hair, and you still don't. If you don't know how to fix your hair, talk to Nancy, talk to Linda. Trust me, they can fix everybody's hair but Ade's. Not fixing your hair, brother. And both of them have told me they want to fix my hair. That's a little scary. By the way, some of you think I'm being funny. Women that don't know how to fix their hair in junior high school don't know how to fix it at 50. and it still eats on them, and they're consumed with nonsense, and it's right under the surface, and they never get around to witnessing because they're still dealing with their teenage angst. Oh my goodness, it's time to grow up from teenage angst. Really? Questions, comments, anybody? No questions, no comments. Old man. The teenage angst, well, first of all, you have to come, you know, this is a long process. The problem is in church. Pastors are going to typically, in our kind of church, preach against the big sins. Some of you have probably heard me say this about 100 times, maybe. Drinking is not the issue. It's why you drink is the issue. It's all what the Bible in 2 Corinthians 7:1 calls sins of the spirit. And those things are hard to get at because they're hard to acknowledge. You should be able to see them when you see get around your family, because you are a product of your family. And it shows up real quick a lot of times when you're around your family and you start seeing the things that you do. It's according to the families. Not all families are the same. That's a question that I'll tell you how women are going to do it. They're going to go to a Sunday school class this summer. This young lady right back here, raise your hand, Emily. And this young lady right over here, Nancy, raise your hand. They're going to teach a class this summer on the subject of shame. And every woman will be in that class at one time or another. Because shame is the real issue in the Bible, where you hold on to the shame. And that's what it is. You're ashamed of. By the way, if you're guilty, you can be forgiven. But if you're shamed, how do you change that? You're going to talk about that, right, sister? Thank you. Jake. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Matthew 28 says that. You know, bringing the gospel, making the disciples, and then bringing them all the way, training them. Yeah, it's a process. It's a long-term thing. Well, Jake, you're a young guy. You're 20 what? I hate to ask. I really hate to ask now. I do too. Jake, it'd be impossible for me, and I'm a young guy. I'm still in my 50s. Be quiet. But it's impossible for me to tell you the difference between my childhood in the 60s and 50s and 60s and early 70s, when it was pretty easy to get people to come to church in a rural environment. Our culture has changed so much now that without the relationship, you have nothing. Today, the problem is the church is focused on inviting, which I think in the past worked. In my little country church, I grew up in Pierre Marquette State Park is where I grew up, in that area, up in the Bluffs. Went to grade school in Fieldon, the big town of Fieldon. Went to the Baptist Church in Fieldon. It's where I got saved. It's where I became a Christian. We had 248 in a service there one time. Now, you must understand, there aren't 248 people in that whole area. This is a rural area. Maybe there's 150 in the town today. I don't know. So my point is, people would come. But the problem is, we're still living like we lived back in the 50s, 40s, and before. And today, people are, this is not right. Everybody's this way. So your job and my job is to get past that. And relationships is the only hope you have today. Now, it's not that way in every culture. You can go to the Philippines in some ways. I mean, I've been there, and people will come to church, or you can go talk to people. In America, try to talk to somebody in Chicago. Hey, let me talk to you. Oh, that ain't happening, Jim. Yes. Yes. Yes, ma'am. I would think that would be true. And I'm very happy about that. Well, let me look in your notes, testimony. What is a testimony, by the way, friend? Everybody in this room has a different testimony. Tim, how old were you when you got saved? 40. You 52 now. You're getting old. It's longer than 10 years. Wow. Your testimony is going to be different than a person. There's several in this room that grew up in Christian homes, got saved at a young age, became a part of a church at a young age. They're not going to be able to talk about bad things. But I think I'm going to give you just real basics of a testimony, and you fill in your own stuff. To me, this is just the simple. You can share a testimony by saying this, talking about, first of all, before I was saved or trusted Christ or whatever term you want to use. Then you can talk about how I was saved or trusted Christ. And then you can talk about since I was saved or trusted Christ. And that's really simple. It's a time thing. And if you got saved as an adult, that's as simple as that. I mean, there was a before, there was how, and then there's an after. Some of us have a more dramatic testimony than others. Some people don't have much of a dramatic testimony. My kids grew up in our home. I don't expect them to say, I was out drugging and drinking, and they never did that kind of thing. But they still, by the way, did God still save them? Yes. Did he still change them? Yes. And I say what I've said 100 times. Ade, you have 2 precious children. I love Junior and your daughter. I don't ever want them to get saved out of something. I want them to be saved from going down that path. And to me, that's as great as a testimony as some guy that was a drunk and got saved. God saved me as a young child. I never went there. Isn't that what you want for your children? It's what I want for them. So, real simple. You can talk about before. You can talk about how. You can talk about since. And that's a good, basic testimony about what happened to you. As far as a plan of salvation, if you go to certain groups, this is the center of the universe. I will tell you right up front, this is not the center of the universe. You can learn a plan of salvation, 1, 2, 3, repeat after me, and you will think you're doing something, but you'll quickly realize the vast majority of those people are not saved. Because people don't get saved, they get saved in a moment. But there's a whole bunch of other things that come into play. And oftentimes it's a hermie. And then she comes here. Army, who was the first people you met her here? Did anybody like you when you came here? So she talked to you. So we call her Pandak, Dak, 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 and there's a reason why we say that, because she talks. No, that wouldn't surprise me. It takes a lot of pieces of a puzzle, folks, to get people saved. Now, I believe it was a really nice thing when I was a young man when I learned kind of a plan of how to lead somebody to Christ. We have 7 minutes, so I'll give 2 minutes of this. This is for my friend back here that's the Gideon's guy. When I was in boot camp in the United States Navy, I was a Christian, but I really didn't grow much as a boy, to say the least. I started reading the Bible for the first time for my own purposes in boot camp, a Gideon's New Testament. Where I read it. And I was saved, but I knew nothing. Now, what was weird was I'm reading through this and I'm circling passages I'd heard. It was amazing how much I'd heard in church, which is good. I had a guy come to me named Dale Shelley. We would go to the little Bible-believing chapel at Orlando Boot Camp. And he said, "Ralph, I want to get saved." And I said, I don't know how to tell you. But I knew in the back of that Gideon's New Testament there was a simple plan of salvation. But folks, that's not how a person, you just don't walk up to a person and say, "Look at this right here." There was a lot of things that led up to that. There's all of this stuff that happens before conversion. His relationship with me, him hearing the gospel in the little Bible-believing chapel, his own personal problems that led up. Then when he got to the plan of salvation, he was ready to get saved. So to me, the plan of salvation is helpful. But it's not a trick to get people saved. Because if I understand things right, getting saved is a miracle. Only God can do. Now he does use our means. So these are just basic thoughts. You can organize it. This is basically the way I look at this. The first thing is simply this. You need to be saved. And there are many verses that talk about our condition not being saved. A sinner, dead in trespasses and sins. All of that. Number two, you cannot save yourself. And this is one of the problems, friend. Look at me. With the easy believism route, if you're not careful, when a person realizes they're lost, they think they can do something to save themselves. I'm not opposed to a person praying a prayer and trusting Christ. But that prayer doesn't save you. Christ saves you. A lot of Catholics will hear a prayer, and they're used to a priest telling them to pray things. Every time you go confess, it's 5 Hail Marys and 10 Our Fathers. They're used to saying prayers. Prayers don't save anybody. Christ saves. So they need to know they cannot save themselves. Nothing wrong with the prayer, but that prayer is not magic. And many people think, "I'm going to go to heaven because," listen to the language, "I did this. My hope is built on nothing less than my prayer." No, my hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. So, you cannot save yourself, and there's lots of passages that talk about that. Thirdly, only Christ can save you. Is that true? Fourthly, you must trust in Jesus Christ and Him alone. And then fifthly, in some fashion, believe. By the way, the Bible uses many words. Call, believe, trust, repent, lots of words. They all mean you're coming before Christ and He alone is the only one that can save you. And you're trusting Him, you're believing, you're receiving, any term you want to use. Now, friends, I want to say this. There is a great danger in easy believism churches that you leave out the part about you cannot save yourself. And you'll get people to pray a prayer for two reasons. Well, hey, I need some life insurance, so I got my get out of hell card. Or they want to get rid of you. I would much rather a person realize you cannot save yourself. You have no hope except Jesus Christ. Then they're ready to get saved. So I think that's important to put in there. I'll give you some helpful hints in the last 3 minutes, and we'll be done with this for today. Make it personal and practical. Next, don't force anything. For whatever reason, some people love to force people to do things. I'm not sure how much that's going to help someone. Keep Christ and Him crucified central. Folks, it's about Jesus. It's not about anything else. Next, use the Bible. By the way, in today's culture, you can assume one thing. People do not know the Bible. They just don't know the Bible. That's even included in churches. Because now we have a whole generation since the 80s of churches where pastors don't really preach the Bible. So the Bible's just never out there in the ether. You know, it's just not part of the conversation. And then my last recommendation is keep after people. Remember, very few of us got saved the first time someone witnessed to us. Is that right? Well, if that's true of you, that's probably going to be true. And I don't mean every time you see Rhonda, you're like a buzzard. You know, no. You see a person, you care about them, you talk to them on here and there and yon, you work with them, you pray for them, you keep, and let us not be weary in well-doing. For in due season, we shall reap if we faint not. Now, I actually expect you in your seat, to be involved in this work. Because this is not the work of the church while we're at church. This is the work when we're scattered abroad. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. May you bless our time together. We ask in Christ's name.